Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Buzz! Buzz! Buffs.
Welcome back to At the Buzzer, a Ralph Report podcast for Colorado Athletics news, notes, and everything in between. I am Jack, one of the co-hosts. Over there is Sam, the better one of the co-hosts. And I thought I would
That's
go
a
by the book.
Lie.
I thought I would go with a by the book introduction, just a nice normal one.
Okay.
Just to ease back in. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, we don't have any guests, so that kind of makes it easy. Just the same old crew.
Yep, some nice schedule. We can talk about recaps, some look-aheads for basketball. We're back in our saddle, I guess the original saddle that forced this show, which is just talking about basketball with football stuff thrown in between.
Yeah,
very exciting.
We could begin with some football news, though.
Well, that's where the news is, I guess, right now.
Housekeeping.
I mean, yeah, basketball's chugging along, but football's making the headlines. So let's start with the housekeeping. And we're going to see a lot of this from every other school in the country. But I guess this is the week that CU had the transfer exodus. I think that means that Carl's meeting with the team this week. So why don't we rattle off those names? Do you have those? Okay, I can start.
Oh, no, I have them. I was just waiting for you. So the first one really was KD Nixon leaving as a graduate transfer. Mm-hmm. So obviously senior receiver, we've seen him play heavily 3 years, highly recruited out of DeSoto, turned out to be quite overshadowed by LaVisca, had a few good games, but was pretty inconsistent overall throughout his CU career.
So he leaves us 7 touchdowns, right?
I don't know the exact stats, yes, but yeah, yes. That
he
sounds about
7
right.
7 touchdowns over 3 years. I remember 4 of those exactly. One of them was obviously super important. I guess I don't want to gloss over too much because I think it'll always be remembered for one of the greatest touchdowns in Folsom Field history, that 96-yard free flicker against Nebraska.
That'll be the KD legacy.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. His other game, I don't know. I guess let me quiz you before I go into it. Do you remember his 3-touchdown game, his big one?
Against Oregon State?
Against Oregon State at home.
Yep, but right before the collapse.
Yeah, that was the 2018 Oregon State. Well, you say right before the collapse. It's unfortunate. KD Nixon's best game as a Buff was the game that Mike McIntyre was dead man walking. That was the 28-point lead collapse in the second half, 24-point lead. And it's unfortunate that is what overshadowed it. But I think he was always, and by all accounts, really good teammate, really good leader. Close with McKinley Wright as well on the basketball team, and
yeah,
person to have on campus for 4 years. I think he has to go get his nut, and I'm totally fine with moving on for that.
Yeah, I think this is a win-win because CU was kind of pivoting to their young receivers anyway. They were using 2 like second-year players and 1 true freshman the whole season, really, not really using KD very much. And so now they get to fully move on to their younger guys while KD hopefully gets to go to a good offense where he can be a veteran presence.
Yeah, and I think he has a lot to offer other teams in terms of just total athletic package. I don't know if he ever got to show that off in CU system as much as I would want him to. And like you said, it's a crowded room. Brendan Rice is coming up, Lavonte Chenault. Dimitri Stanley is the obvious go-getter right now. Plus, you have Maurice Bell in there and a new crop of wide receivers that is also going to push for time. So good time to move on. I think KD made the right decision.
Yeah, and then so after that, we had Darian Rakestraw. He's moving on as a graduate transfer, so he played safety the past couple of years. I think it's like this one's an okay deal going on. He wasn't that good, but he was a starter, and we also have like what, two safeties on the roster, maybe.
Yeah, and one of them was Isaiah Lewis, who was barely on the roster last year. So yeah, it's thin back there.
Yeah, do you have any thoughts on Rakestraw before we move on?
Well, I'll let you finish before I go into the exact why. But I thought he did a great job servicing what was a pretty barren safety backfield. And I think he was a Pac-12 player. I don't think he ever won games for CU, and I also don't think he was the reason that CU lost any games. So I think at a place like University of Colorado, that's super valuable because, you know, we obviously have not won a lot of Pac-12 games. So being someone who won't lose you Pac-12 games is a pretty big win above replacement type player. But hopefully in this new era of a nice floor of talent, that's not a huge loss.
Mm-hmm. And then the last transfer, as far as I know so far, is Jaron Mangum, the running back, who had an incredible freshman spring game. And every CU fan was so hyped about him. And then he was never very good. I think he averaged fewer than 2 yards per carry.
He goes past that. His debut game was at 2018 LaVisca Chenault show CSU, where he scored two touchdowns. He scored two touchdowns in the week after against Nebraska that same year. So he was pretty hyped coming in. And he was also a four-star running back. Darian Hagan pulled him out of Michigan, which is pretty big. He's a gigantic dude who can run pretty fast. There's a lot of hype around him, but like you said, he never gelled with that system.
Yeah. This means Marvin Ham is the only player left from the Ham Championship of 2019.
Yeah. Well, Arlington Hambright completed eligibility and just aged out, but yeah, Marvin Ham now has to carry the banner. I'm trying to think if there's anyone in this recruiting class who has a deli meat last name, and I'm not getting it right away.
There's a player from Hamburg, Germany. Who? Jaschke Gustav.
Oh, is he? Nice.
Yeah.
And Valentin Sen is from Austria, but that's not close. Anyways, Mangum also similar to Nixon. It's just a crowded running back room, man. I mean, Broussard obviously is going to be the ringleader moving forward. Alex Fontenot, who started the year before, is coming off of injury. Deion Smith, who's by all accounts has been really exciting coming off of injury. You have Josh Davis still there. I don't know. There's a lot of talent in that backfield. And Mangum might want a place where it's easier to get a lot of carries. Because I also feel like he's the type of guy who gets better in the game as defenses get tired of tackling him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be really good wherever he goes up. Okay, it reminds me of like Patrick Carr putting up numbers when he transferred to Houston. Obviously, I think he's better than Patrick Carr, but it's just like...
Why are you disrespecting Patrick Carr?
Oh, okay.
I love Patrick Carr. He was that was also like the first real win of Troy Walters' recruiting era, and I'm always bringing it back to recruiting because it's my favorite part. But also, remember that UCLA game? 2015?
I don't.
Oh, my God. Sefo Lufau. We were wearing, like, white, gray, white, and there was that awesome fun stat. We were still on it near the end, but that fun stat where UCLA had scored 21 points off of CU red zone trips because of how many interceptions Sefo Lufau threw in the red zone. Do you remember that?
Oh, my God. No, I don't remember that. I think I explicitly turned it off.
Yeah, and we were still in it near the end because Patrick Carr was getting like 35 carries. He had like 150 yards and two touchdowns. And so you just kept coming back at him, and then it was just like you couldn't turn it over that much. Anyways, Carr and Mangum hopefully will both thrive outside of Boulder.
Yeah. Any other transfers I missed?
No, that's been real. I mean, Jason Harris officially left to Arizona. We knew that Jason Harris had left, but we didn't know where. It makes sense. Arizona's where his dad played. His mom graduated from there. His brother's playing there now. And it appears that Jed Fish has, against my odds, ejected a lot of energy into that program. So we're going to see him. We're going to be playing against Harris moving forward, which is unfortunate because he has quite a bit of talent. but it's nice to see that he ended up somewhere that he will play.
Yeah. Moving on to defense coordinator.
Yeah, well, so this is what I was going to say. I think Rakestra, and it came up from a lot of other player reactions on Twitter, was close with Tyson Summers, as were plenty of other secondary members. I think when Tyson Summers was fired, there's the news, it shook up a lot of those players, which is part of why Rakestra also felt comfortable leaving. So that's the big news, I think, is Tyson Summers is out.
He was also the safeties coach
for his first year, and then he moved to linebackers.
Oh yes,
middle linebackers this year.
Yeah, all right.
But yeah, I mean, he built connections. He was a Georgia kid, just like Rakestra, which is why I wanted to bring that up. Summers obviously deepened the Georgia connections and followed Mel Tucker from Georgia. So I was not expecting this. I don't know if many people were, but Tyson Summers is out as Colorado's defensive coordinator.
See, I thought that this move would have happened last year because Mel Tucker was gone. Summers, it was hard to tell if that was Mel Tucker's defense or if it was Summers' defense because he was a first-time defensive coordinator. No, he wasn't. But yeah, I didn't know if he would stick around after he left. And so I guess I wasn't caught by surprise too much because remember, Darrell was kind of just trying to keep the pieces that he was left behind and then fill whatever vacancies he could fill. And now that he actually has time to round out his staff, it makes a little bit of sense to move on from those he didn't want to keep around.
I think in hindsight, you're exactly correct. He came in way too late to obviously do anything past hire the vacancies that were already there. And I think he did a good job hiring for those vacancies. We know that Jimmy Brumbaugh left for Tennessee. We fill that with arguably a better coach in Chris Wilson. We know that Chris Kapilovich left for Michigan State. We filled that with the guy that everyone panned, including me and Rich Rodriguez, who was an athletic director at a Texas high school. Turned out that Rodriguez actually knows what he's doing too. So that's a weird connection. But that one is also, we can talk about that a little more later. Anyways, I mean, Darrell hired people he had to replace. And then, like you said, I think he was just trying to, he came in so late, he was just trying to continue what was there while also knowing, making moves in the future. And while I don't necessarily agree that Summers is the place that I would start, I'm not there every day. And also I think it's speaking again to just like the, I've been there before and I know how to do stuff that Darrell has exhibited that CU hasn't seen since Gary Barnett, right? Like he spent a year presumably like working with Summers and also making sure that he had all his ducks in a row, studying people who he wanted to replace. And I'm assuming he has a replacement either lined up or he's talking to, I don't know, but I think it's just so smart to be like, look, we'll work with what we got. We'll take whatever's here. I don't want to ruin the momentum that's here. And then when I want to make this my program, I'll wait, you know, until the time is right in the next offseason and I've fully installed my culture and people have bought in already. Because I think it's a lot easier to sell to the players, hey, this is a guy you knew before, or I'm going to make a change. But look, we just won four. We just had a winning season and we went to the Alamo Bowl. I know what I'm doing, right?
Yeah, I think it's good to build goodwill before making changes like that.
Especially when it came in so late.
Yeah, I'm really curious who they're going to hire now. I have no idea. I don't know anything through the grapevine.
Well, this is my crack. So I love coaching searches and everything that comes with it. It's not the same when it's not a head coach because there's not nearly as much clues to follow. But now I'm just constantly on Twitter looking at any connections I can try to find, however small they are. And so far, there's not that much. So in terms of potential candidates, there's a few rumors floating around. Brian Howell had a great article out on Buff Zone. Did you read that one, Sam?
I did not.
Well, he mentioned, and this is the one that everyone's been mentioning, Chris Wilson might be elevated from his defensive line position to defensive coordinator, partially to keep the buzzers at Miami off of him, and partially because he did a great job at Mississippi State when he was a defensive coordinator there. And he called plays for at least one of those years of the three that he was DC. I guess Miami already filled the defensive line coach, so it's not like we need to elevate him to keep him there. And the other thing is, I don't like being the Power Five that has to elevate a position coach to a coordinator position to keep another Power Five team from taking him, right? I think that's kind of small time. And I don't think that screams, I don't know. If CU's going to fire a defensive coordinator, which by all accounts was liked by the players and also had some really good games, he called some really good games. His scoring average isn't great, but he did a good job, I think, when he had to. Mm-hmm. I think they need to have someone who's obviously a better replacement level coach. And Wilson's track record may say that, but also it's like you already have him at DL coach. I don't think elevating him to replace the DC that you just paid to fire, right? You just paid $500,000 to get this guy out of here. Is that splash higher? So I'm looking for now, because we have no candidates to go off of and I get to say whatever I want. I'm looking for a bigger hire than elevating the defensive line coach.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I think that if you fire Summers in that case, you kind of have to have a bigger name coming in. Like, I agree with that.
Yeah. So of the names that Brian Howell put out, and I won't reveal all of them, you should please read his article, because Brian Howell continues to do great work covering the team. The one that I'm most excited for is Gerald Alexander, if you know that name.
Mm-mm. I don't know anything.
So Gerald Alexander actually coaches at the Dolphins now. He didn't overlap timing-wise with Darrell when Darrell's at the Dolphins before CU hired him, which is interesting. But they know, I'm assuming that helps vet, because obviously Darrell knows a lot of the staff in place there. Gerald Alexander made his bones as a deep defensive backs coach at Cal. So under defensive head coach Justin Wilcox out there, if you remember that three-year time stretch, 2017 to 2019, I think CU only played Cal once, maybe twice.
Yeah, but they had just like ridiculous DBs.
Yeah, exactly. Every single defensive back was drafted or draftable. And that was largely under Gerald Alexander, who's still really young. I think he's 36 this year. And he is just like, he just did great work with those kids. So he's from California, obviously coached at Cal defensive backs, and now he's at Miami Dolphins defensive backs. I think his resume is good enough for me to, like, in terms of overall, not just that bullet point, it's good enough for me to take a chance on him. He played at Boise State, so he's from the West, got picked second round, played in the NFL for five or so years, you know, worked at Washington as a grad assistant. Then he worked at Montana State's defensive backs coach. Cal hired him, did amazing work at Cal. And then now he's in the NFL in the same capacity. I think he would do a great job recruiting. I think he's young enough to have a lot of fire recruiting. And I think he has connections in California, which CU desperately needs to pick up their recruiting slack in.
Yeah, no, I like that. I'm reading about him right now. I found Brian's article. It's pretty good.
Yeah, so that's the one that excited me of his name. There's a few other names, and I'm sure people would want a little more experience there, especially because Darrell's an offensive coach. So I think they want someone who could be a CEO of the defensive side. The other thing that I want to mention is Darrell's last DC at UCLA is, I think his name is Dwayne Walker. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. And he just got hired by Jed Fish at Arizona to coach defensive backs. So he might be an option to elevate immediately back to DC, which would be not, I would not mind it, but it'd also be like, yeah, really, that's the best we could do. So I
don't know. Also, it'd be on the dirty side in the CU Arizona rivalry.
Who cares?
Which would be funny as hell.
Yeah.
To elevate.
Yeah. We also stole Demetrius Martin from them last year, so
they don't like us. Well, good for them. We don't like them.
Yeah. So I don't know. Gerald Alexander is a really fun name. And I guess, do you have any pie in the sky candidates, Sam? No, money's no object.
Me?
Anyone that you are thinking of? If not, I'm stalling for time as I go through my list.
I mean, I don't really know any defensive coordinator candidates, much less any defensive coordinators in college football, really. I only know the big ones.
Okay. Well,
like, I didn't even know Mel Tucker until he was rumored to go to CU. I don't follow college football that much.
Nationally, at least.
Yeah, you and all our listeners know by now.
Yeah, you are. It's fine. You are a stand-in for the average fan.
Yeah, I would hire Tony Romo as my defensive coordinator.
Oh, man. Hey, names from your past are available. I believe Chappelle Brown is the defensive packs coach at Boise. No, he's at UC Davis with Dan Hawkins and new offensive coordinator Cody Hawkins.
Didn't Troy Walters just get promoted?
Troy Walters? He was fired. Wait, what am I talking?
Ryan Walters. My bad. Yes. I was thinking.
Well, not promoted. He went to, he was defensive coordinator in Missouri, and now he went to Illinois. But he also wouldn't excite me that much. I think that is a keep it in the family hire. He's obviously exciting. I think he's a good recruiter, but his defenses have not been noticeably better than Summers, and in fact have been worse, I would say. So yeah, I don't know. I'm not too worried. I would not like that much. Jaleel Brown, I think, is on the new Boise State staff.
What?
Hold on.
That's crazy.
Let me see if I got that right. Yeah, he's the cornerbacks coach at Boise, so that's a name to keep an eye on. Yeah,
that's weird. It's not necessarily really for weird seeing
DC,
this.
But that'd be a fun cornerbacks coach in the near future. And I guess the last coaching news I want to talk about is USC is hiring an offensive line coach, and there have been rumors flying around on their side. And I'm sorry, I'm laughing already, but that Clayton Adams is a candidate for the vacancy.
Oh my God!
Former coach, Arizona State, an offensive line coach.
Arizona State's also looking at him, I think.
Yeah, well, hey, he was a co-OC in the Pac-12.
God,
he was an assistant offensive line coach, one of the best offensive lines in the country, in Indianapolis Colts. They should take that chance.
Wait, he was the Colts O-line coach?
No, he was a coach assistant to the offensive line.
Oh, I was going to say, like, damn, he should not have gotten that job.
He did not. His mentor got the job. His mentor at Boise State got the job, and he was looking out for his mentee. So,
maybe he's gotten better.
Okay, yeah, maybe. I would love for USC to take that chance to find out, man. So that's it. We don't know too much. The other big news, I guess, is Drew Wilson was let go as a strength coach, which I had absolutely nothing but praise for Drew Wilson. So I'll be interested to see how Darrell manages there.
Yeah. You know what? I have no idea what a strength coach, how players look strong, whether or not they are or aren't strong. I don't know.
Really? I mean, Drew Wilson did a great job compared to
Jalen Sami's very strong.
Yeah. And Drew what was his name? Foreman before, who was under McIntyre, was cross-training and keeping the offensive line purposely under 300 pounds. And Drew Wilson did a good job undoing that. But I think, Sam, it was obvious watching Texas, seeing what a big guy versus a small guy does, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Texas is noticeably bigger. Part of that's because they have way bigger blocks of clay to mold. So we'll see what Darrell – I think Darrell was just – he mentioned it, like, he doesn't want CU to look like that against a team like Texas again. So I think hopefully another thing where he has a guy in mind that from the pro ranks maybe, or someone he trusts. And I don't know anything about the ins and outs of strength coaching, but players love Drew Wilson. He was there through three staffs. So it's going to be hard to rebuild that trust.
Yeah, that is kind of a big deal. Well, the only thing we can confirm is that Darian Hagan's going to stick around.
Forever and always. I mean, why would he be Boulder? He's the mayor here.
Yeah, he's a legend. So, also, amazing coach. Go ahead.
So, I don't know. We're seeing Darrell remake the program more in his image. And like I said, I'm just so interested. It's the first time, correct me if I'm wrong here.
Okay.
Right? Dan Hawkins, first time Power Five head coach. John Embry, first time Power Five head coach. Mike McIntyre, first time Power Five head coach. Mel Tucker, first time Power Five head coach. The only one, and depends on how you count Northwestern, I guess, in the 90s, I would assume they count as a Power Five, even though they were completely awful. The only one since Gary Barnett that was experienced in the Power Five is Carl Durrell. And it's just, I don't know how to describe it other than, like, I'm shocked continually by him just being doing stuff that kind of makes sense all the time, right? Like, yeah, he's a little conservative in the play calling and the, like, you know, going for fourth or kicking a field goal or punting. Like, but overall, I feel like the program is just consistently competent in ways that we haven't seen in some time. Like, he just knows some stuff about everything, about like, here's what I would do here. And I'm excited to see what his staff looks like moving forward as he gets people that hopefully also share that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I don't know. He's done nothing but make me more excited about his tenure, which I was lukewarm to begin with. So I'm glad that he's continually making more excited, and hopefully his DC hire continues that.
Yeah, let's move on to basketball though. I'm getting bored.
Let's move on to your not yet ranked Colorado Buffaloes.
Not yet. So
what's their record again?
10-3. And 4-2 in conference play.
And what are those losses? Those three losses? They had to be the mediocre teams, right? If they're not ranked.
What?
Those three losses, right? If they aren't, if CU isn't ranked yet, those losses have to be to pretty bad teams to drop a 10-3 Power 5 team out of the rankings.
I don't know if you're trolling or not, but
yes, I'm trolling.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people, I guess CU is being perpetually considered an underrated team, even though we are in the top 10, like all of, or top 25, all of last season, basically. And a lock for the NCAA tournament. Really good team the year before. Same exact players the whole time. I don't know why. This is not an under the radar team.
I know.
This is a good team.
So yeah, what I was saying is the three losses are number one, all on the road. And number two, all the teams that are in and around the top 25. This year, including what's going to be in and around the top five this year.
Yeah, the loss at Tennessee is like, that's just like a blank on the resume. If anything, it looks fine.
I was about to say, if anything, the fact that that's single digits might be a positive as the year goes on. Like, that might be a good thing to see you only lost by single digits, which is crazy.
Yeah, the game at Arizona, we can all talk about like Arizona. They're always going to be mercurial. And that was the best game they'll play all season.
Well, you say that, easily. But they also just blew the doors off of Wazoo last night, or Oregon State last night. But anyways, Arizona's a good team.
No, I mean, like, we're better than Oregon State.
But. Right. I'm just, okay. Well, we also, yes. Anyways, this week.
that was a road game. 34-point win on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Arizona hits their shots, which is not always going to happen, they can just beat the shit out of anybody.
Yeah, they have talent, unfortunately, still. but this week, CU proved once again that they are also a good to great team.
Yeah. So their game at Utah.
Tough place.
That was a horrible game. I hated watching that. It was ugly as shit. And neither team really deserved to win. It was just that Utah was so, so bad in the second half. That I think CU kind of won just by default. And I know you're going to have to give credit for CU for like their 15-0 run to open the second half. You have to give them credit for locking down their defense. But it was like Utah, I think they shot like 1 of 10 on three-pointers and like 0 for 7 on free throws in the second half. It was crazy.
Okay, yeah. You say you have to give credit to CU for the 15-0 run. I also have to give credit, I think, time and again, and I got into a tizzy afterwards because I saw a lot of CU fans upset with the play, which you should have been. But like, Tad Boyle built this program to be able to win ugly, right? I feel like that's like his whole thing is when shots aren't falling, when you can't get the offense that you want, you need to fall back on two things, defense and rebound, to win you the game. And that's exact. These games are why he does that. See, you shot 35%, right? They shot 29% from three, 35% from the field. Their free throws were a terrible pedestrian 75% as opposed to their normal 85%. And you walk away with the win. And that's really hard to do on the road against a pretty good Power 5 team. And that's a testament to this year's team and Tad Boyle's tenets of the program.
Yeah, we can. The team is a high floor. Like, it always will have a high floor of, we're going to hold the other team under 70. And if we can scratch and claw and just eke out a win because we have the best player on the floor every time we take the court, that's a pretty good path to getting 20 wins every season, as we've seen.
That Utah game is ugly when it happens, beautiful when it's over. So that's basically how I thought about it. CU hadn't won at Utah since 2012, which obviously was a pretty big year for CU. And getting that monkey off the back was great. Beating a full strength Utah team was great. I believe they had no one out, and CU was missing Dallas Walden and Keyshawn Barthelemy went down with an injury there. And surviving a rare off game from McKinley Wright is great. He was fine, but they also did a lot of work to make him just fine. And CU relied on some great contributions, which we'll talk about in a second, from some players that don't normally give those to win. And just proves this team is balanced. So
Also, two other things. Utah just beat Stanford by 14 last night, which is crazy.
At home, I will say.
At home. Also, how do you let Timmy Allen score 22 points on you if you're Stanford? That guy, like, just give him space to shoot.
Like, well, he scored like 17 against CU, right? You say that, but he always finds his way to get his buckets. 19 against CU.
Yeah, I know. I just don't get it. Like, I don't understand why he scores so much.
Because he's really good at driving. I mean, he has the perfect – he's like I'm trying to think of a good NBA comp, but he has a perfect
body for driving. There's no NBA comp because his type of player – have you seen his jump shot?
It's disgusting.
I gagged when I saw it. I don't even really know if I've noticed it until now, but it was just like horrible. Like, he shoots it underneath his chin.
Yeah, and he also keeps the ball so far in front the whole time.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Just
but
give him like 5 feet of space.
Basketball is so much more fun to me. It's like,
it's because there's weird, wacky players where it makes sense.
Bonzi Colson can thrive. Timmy Allen can thrive.
Oh, I love Bonzi.
Anyways, for reference, people say that Utah might not be that good this year. For reference, CU started this year ranked in KenPom 62nd overall. Utah is ranked right now 63rd overall. So they're good. They will beat some teams. Like CU, they had a really hard game start to the conference schedule at UCLA, at USC, home in Oregon, home at Colorado. And now that that's opening up, they're going to start beating some teams.
That's like the hardest thing. That's literally the four best teams in the conference. Well, it depends how you feel about Arizona, but
right.
That's damn.
Yeah, so the Mountain teams had it tough this year, and they're both going to start racking up W's, hopefully.
Yeah. Also, what was I going to say?
Well,
damn. Well, they're gonna get a lot of upsets. Like, they did just beat Stanford. Like, Stanford's good. We're gonna talk about them later on the pod, but like, that's a really good win that they just got.
Yeah, double digit win over a good team. So Utah's good. That was a great win for CU, even if it was ugly as sin. So let's talk about an even better win for CU.
Yeah. So the Cal first half, I believe you tweeted something like, this game is going to make me question why I watch college basketball.
Which it did for the first 10 minutes. That's when I said that. When it was like 7-6 with, I think, 8 minutes in the first half or something disgusting like that.
Yeah, yeah. So Cal, they jumped out to an 18-11 lead. And it was because Mikhail Coleman got hot. And he was talking a lot of shit to the bench. God bless him. He didn't score another point for like, I think, 20 minutes.
Yep. When are people going to learn? Don't talk shit to McKinley Wright. All these guards do it, and he will come back and kill you.
Yeah. And so CU trailing by 7 against a team that they should have won by 20, or as we see, 29 points. They looked a little bit stagnant on offense, and then they put in Jabari Walker. And Jabari Walker had 17 points in the first half, 23 in the game, I believe. And he just completely energized the team. The offense had a more pep to its step, and then that kind of translated on both ends. And from the 10-minute mark in the first half on through the rest of the game, CU was just going balls to the wall on both ends of the court. And like there, McKinley Wright was the leader of that. Of course, he set the record, the all-time assist record. He was just absolutely dominating on the defensive side. Like, he was like flying everywhere. Deflecting passes, getting in people's faces, and starting fast breaks. That was a really fun game for him.
I'm relying on you here just because I had to stop watching, I think, near the end of the first half. So I only saw the bad parts. I missed most of the run.
Well, Deshaun Schwartz had his second great game in a row. Maddox Daniels scored like 12 points on 4 shots, which is crazy.
Him being way better at defense and actually shooting as he has promised to is
a welcome huge, surprise.
Yeah, huge development. I was not expecting that.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried. I thought that CU, I didn't think they had any interior scoring the past few games without Dallas Walton. But Jabari Walker's been like so solid off the bench. He is so promising, and it helps that he's making over half his threes right now because teams are still not defending him from beyond the arc. Oh, can I actually tell you the 3-point percentages on this team?
Yeah.
Jabari Walker, 52% from three.
On decent amount of attempts, right?
1.6 a game.
Okay.
Dallas Walton at 50%.
Yeah.
Deshaun Schwartz is at 44% on four attempts per game. Jariah Horan, 43% on 4 attempts a game. Maddox Daniels, 40% from 4 attempts a game.
Beautiful.
Yeah. McKinley Wright is 36% on 3 attempts.
That's a step and up, then, though.
And then, yeah, and then Eli Parquet and Keyshawn Barthelemy aren't very good shooters. But that's it. Or, like, that's crazy. Batty.
Batty's at 2 for 12.
Well, Batty doesn't really take those threes. I didn't even see him. He was at 17%.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, we can talk about – we can blow this up into a macro-level discussion past the Cal game. If you'd like, but basically I still want to zero in on, I watched some of the highlights from the second half, and I guess what you said and what I've seen, it's just when CU has balanced scoring like that, the nice thing about this team is, I think, like you said, I believe you tweeted this on the Ralphie Report account, like there are 7 or 8 dudes in this rotation that can all take over stretches, like 5-minute stretches, 6-minute stretches of a game. And, mm-hmm. and score CU out of a bad slump, or even not out of a bad slump, just like extend CU's lead. And having such a ridiculous stable of people that can do that is such a luxury in college basketball. And it's something that I don't know if we've seen at CU at all.
Yeah, no, this offense is so balanced. I kind of want to go back to 2012. But I don't think they had that many guys.
Well, the 2011 team is by far Tad's best offense, but it wasn't this, right? It was because Alec Burks could do that by himself, and Corey Higgins could do that by himself. Relford had his day. Austin Dufault had his days, and Knutson had his days.
Yeah.
But Roberson was nothing, right? No, Roberson was nothing. Shannon Sharp was nothing. Tomlinson was nothing on offense.
Yeah. But so that's 5 guys. We have, I think, 7 on this team who can all get hot and carry.
Yeah, and that's California, nice. I think they all got hot. It's not going to happen against California.
Yeah, no. Every single player, except probably Evan Batty. He just had a regular ho-hum game, but everybody else was just, like,
doing great. As a lot of people mentioned, as I saw at least on Twitter, that Cal's guy, Andre Kelly, is basically just, like, Evan Batty's twin, right? They're both about 6'8". They're both about 270. And Kelly just got way more touches, so he got more points. And he definitely had way better – he had touch more so than Batty that game. But it's hard for Batty to score when there's a dude who looks exactly like Evan Batty that you can't really bully around.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah, and it's – Cal was missing, and I've mentioned this before on the podcast. They're mentioning missing my favorite player, not a CU player in the Pac-12, Matt Bradley. I love Matt Bradley, and he's their best player. Just a lefty, like – swaggering huge guard,
6'4", 220, just chuck shots.
Yeah, and I love him, and they didn't have that, which they're when they get Bradley back, they're gonna upset some people. So similar to Utah, this is a win that's gonna look better as the season moves on.
Yeah.
Now
so
I wanna talk macro level.
So we already talked about that CU, the way they play defense and the way they rebound, they're always going to have this floor.
Mm-hmm.
But their ceiling is that they have a lot of guys who can get hot. And if those guys get hot and they're playing solid defense, any game can turn into a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, quickly. Like, remember last year against Oregon where we, like, got out to, like, a 20-point lead in the first half and just never let up?
Yeah.
Like, that type of game. Go ahead.
Well, Yeah. So here's where I'm at with this team. I think my two things I've loved to see in the past like four games. Number one, Deshaun Schwartz getting more aggressive on the dribble. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I've loved to see. Like, this is what's happened, and I'm loving seeing it, right? Deshaun Schwartz is such a versatile offensive weapon. I mean, 18 of 41 from three for 44% is huge. That's his main thing, is he's always a silky smooth stroke. But I always think he is a second or third best ball handler on this team, and I've loved to see that. Just little things. I don't know if you've noticed that too, but – on the boards, he's really good rebounder, I think, for mm-hmm. a wing player. And I've noticed that he doesn't immediately look for an outlet anymore. He takes it up the floor. And that's like a little confidence thing that shows like he is comfortable with the ball in his hand, initiating offense. And I really want to see more from that, because I think he's one of CU's most efficient options when it's just Deshaun Schwartz. So I've loved to see him take it to the rack. He has these weird left-handed off-rhythm finishes that almost no, like, it's really hard to guard that, especially in college. And you've seen that so many times where he'll just delay like half a second and then just throw up a little left-handed, one-handed like layup or floater, and he has a nice touch. It goes in, and it's just hard to defend that. I want to see a lot more from that, and I'm glad that he's, as a senior, getting way more aggressive as the season goes on. I want to see him being the second option on offense, because I think he has the ability to do that sustainably. However, the thing that gives me pause is if Jabari Walker can get out of foul trouble, that dude is one of the best offensive players in the Pac-12. It is insane what he's doing right now.
Do you want to tell our listeners what exactly he's doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, so people keep saying, how did he not get more minutes early on? And I think, number one, he did get minutes early on. But number two, he was just fouling everyone a shit ton. Like, before the Utah game, he had 4 fouls in 8 minutes against Oregon, right? So it's like,
yeah.
The dude is going – he's a freshman. That's what happens when you're a freshman big. You're going to foul people. It's just fine. You're going to live with that, and I think Tad has said it as such too. But when he stays out of foul trouble, I think he had 2 fouls against California.
Yep, 3 against Utah. He was really good against Utah too. He had 15 and 10.
Right. He was also huge in that game, because it's just like there's something about either people aren't anticipating his energy level, or they don't – like it's just so much – further above everyone else on the court when he steps on. He just gets every loose ball. He sprints down the court every time. And I love his aggression from the wing to take it to the rack is insane. And it's working out. So, you know, I don't know if it's him playing against second units, and these second units aren't available, like aren't ready for this. But man, like, I don't know if CU's had a player like that since maybe XJ, especially early XJ. But XJ was never this, I don't know, but Jabari Walker is also a little more team focused.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fun to watch.
I'm pulling up XJ's stats. I want to see what his sixth man ability was.
Yeah, the 20
wasn't this.
His freshman year is 2013.
Yep, I'm looking.
He was fun that year. So he was 44% from three, 25 or 57.
Yep.
He was 54% from two. His offensive rating was lower at 102. He's a little less efficient.
But I should pull up some the offensive ratings. Okay, do you want to guess who has the three highest offensive ratings on CU besides?
On this team?
Yeah, not counting walk-ons.
Okay, it's got to be McKinley.
Nope. Number one, Dallas Walton.
That makes sense.
147 offensive rating. Also, someone who I decided to mute on Twitter keeps saying that Dallas Walton isn't good at basketball. And I just wanted to say that this dude has a 68% field goal percentage while taking a bunch of threes. So he's pretty good offensively. All right, second is McKinley Wright. And then third is Jabari Walker.
Yeah. That tracks for me. I mean, he's got. I mean, what? Yeah. So, what did you see in the Cal game? Because I missed a lot of his explosion.
Per 40 minutes, he's at 24 points a game. So yeah, in the Cal game, so he started out just making jumpers. Like, he made 3 threes on 3 attempts, and then he really likes to crash the paint. Like, he's always going to cut from the dunker spot into, like, a layup or something. And I don't really think he takes any shots besides like layups and dunks and three pointers. Like he's not, I don't think he's done anything other than that. And he draws so many fouls. And I think that one is because he outworks people and he's just faster than they're expecting. And so where he just gets somewhere and they just don't expect it and they just hack him on accident.
I mean, we saw that a few times on the Utah game where he would just be the first to a ball that maybe rebounded weird and got on the ground. And like, he would just literally, and this is going to sound dumb, but like bend over faster than the other teams and just get to it, like, and go up immediately. His activity level is just off the charts. And the other thing, like you mentioned, I love that how simple he's making the game on offense right now. Mm-hmm. If he's open, he's going to shoot the ball. If he's near the basket, he's going to get a layup. And that's just how, I mean, it's just like, yes, that's exactly what I want from a big man.
He has a very happy trigger finger, which is perfect. Great. We don't need you to do anything other than finish possessions right now.
Yeah. It's in.
And it's not like he's not taking bad shots.
No. And his stroke is really, really smooth. I'm getting ahead of myself, but his length and activity level and athleticism next to Evan Batty next year is going to be so fun for me to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Power forward Jabari Walker, Evan Batty center. And I think the games complement each other so well. Evan Batty, very willing passer. He's going to get doubled off the post at times. You know who's really going to feed off of that? Jabari. An elite garbage man like Jabari Walker, because he can catch everything, super lanky, just chuck it near him. He's going to score.
See, this is what I always wanted Torrey Miller to become, like an energy big.
Perfect. Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I think he's like the juice stats Torrey Miller. And I just wanted him to be like an intimidator who would just dunk on people, grab every rebound. But like Jabari also shoots threes.
Yeah, whenever I see Jabari Walker, I see a little more like if Amari Stoudemire was born 10 years later.
I want to chill out on the Amari Stoudemire comparisons.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is Amari Stoudemire knew that he was elite as a quickness scoring big. So if you got at the free throw line, it was a pump fake, rip, two dribble, and then he's going to destroy the rim. And I think that Jabari Walker's at a pump fake, rip, two dribble, get a layup or a foul, which I really like that. I think it's just the aggression that they both play on offense with. It's so fun.
Yeah, I love his aggression. Should we talk about McKinley Wright a little bit? Because he did just set a career record.
I was about to say, yeah.
Stood for 37 years. He also, a lot of people have been saying, oh, of course he's going to break the record. He plays more games. But he actually broke the record having played his like 112th career game, which is the exact same as Jay Humphries, which Pat Rooney pointed out. Yeah. Also, 12 assists last night.
Yeah, when he broke the record, he made sure that no one else is going to break that record.
Yeah, he had 7 assists and had taken one shot in the first half. He was just moving the ball. Everybody was hot, and so he was like, oh, I don't got to do anything. Here, guys. He's so fun, and he's never been better than he has been now. If you look at his like per game stats, he's about average. Like he's always been like 14-15 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, but his shooting percentages are way up. He has not missed the floater yet, I don't think, this season.
I heard he had one blocked yesterday.
Oh, I don't remember.
Okay, well, whatever.
But like his advanced stat, like his just regular stats, his like shooting stats, his drawn fouls ratings, his offensive rating, defense rating, everything has never been better. He's not turning the ball over that much. I mean, he has more so the past couple of games, but yeah, he's just been insanely good. His pretty sure he's leading the Pac-12 in like box plus minus, which basically boils down how effective a player is like on his team winning. Let me check. Yeah, it's higher than Oscar De Silva's, and I can't imagine who else would be up there.
Remy Martin, of course.
I want to look at Remy Martin's stats just for the pettiness.
No.
Oh, he's actually not doing too bad.
I'm seeing for what is this? Effective field goal percent. I don't care about that.
I mean, that's a good stat, but
kind of.
Go ahead.
Well, so let's go overall, right? Here's my overall point. He's been the same player for 4 years in terms of like what he does. He's not going to be Remy Martin, to speak his name again, and force the game his way. He's not going to be Marcus Howard and chuck shots until he starts scoring teams out of the game. More to me, what's more valuable is he gives consistent effort on defense 100% of the time, and he allows the game flow to dictate how he kills the other team. And I think, I mean, that's just, he's so smart about that all the time. And what people aren't, I mean, people aren't going to mention this because obviously they shouldn't. But the other crazy thing is, his rebounding has kept pace with his record-breaking assist numbers as a 5'11", 6-foot guard. And that's insane to me. And that, I mean, it just proves he's a team-first player. He is crashing boards all the time. I don't know what else to say about the. I mean, it's a shame that all of CU's best players ever are pretty much also point guards, because it makes it harder to say he's the best point guard ever or he's the best player ever.
Yeah, you can't be the best point guard ever at Chauncey Billups School.
Right, and it's like you have Chauncey Billups, Spencer Dinwiddie, McKinley Wright, Jay Humphries, all in the same breath. And I think obviously he just passed Jay Humphries. But I don't know if a player has been as consistently impactful as McKinley Wright for 4 years, because we only got 2 of Chauncey, 2.5 for Dinwiddie. Man, what a motor. Like, what a dude to have.
I think the only player really comparable would be like Josh Scott for the 4 years, if you want to expand to big men.
Right, but the McKinley Wright naturally just affects the game more because he has the ball in his hand every possession.
Yeah.
So, man, I mean, spoiled. Right. If you asked Tad to pick a guard from his 10 years, I think he would pick McKinley, which is in itself a huge compliment, right?
Yeah.
I had to imagine he over Dinwiddie, over Derek White. If he said you pick a guard for 4 years, who do you pick? He probably picks McKinley.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
You're going to look back at his 4 years and hopefully, like you said, I don't know if he deserves player of the year this year for just this year's stats, but as a career award and as a defensive award, hopefully he gets it. If CU keeps getting hot, he deserves it.
Yeah, I mean, they are going to be playing the other main contender on Saturday. Are you worried about Stanford at all?
Not particularly. So I'm sure I should be, and I will as the game gets closer, which I guess it's Friday, so how close could it get? But Zaire Williams is a problem and is a guy who's athletic enough to give CU fits. But they also, if you can shut down Oscar Da Silva and putting the ball in just Zaire's hands, you probably have a pretty good shot to win. Utah did a good job against Da Silva this week, and I think, I don't know, CU as a team has a lot. What weakness do you exploit right now? If you're looking at CU, if you're Stanford, what do you do? I honestly don't know. What is their weakness?
CU?
Yeah.
I think they have a pretty significant weakness on interior defense.
Right, but Walton is supposed to come back on.
Yeah, but I don't know. We could talk about Walton if you want, but I don't really think of him as a great interior defender.
Once again, not on his own. If you, in a vacuum, Dallas Walton as your main defender is not going to be an intimidator, but put him next to a guy like Evan Batty, who takes up space but doesn't have that, you know, the verticality. And I think those two put together put up a pretty nice united front. I think Batty takes Da Silva, right? And Walton takes overflow and help D.
I just think, like, Da Silva is just – he's so polished and he's so just like, he knows exactly what he's doing and he knows exactly what shots he wants. And I just have such a high opinion of him, just a general as a player, that he scares me, because I feel like he could just get a bunch, like Stanford could slow the game down and he could just get a ton of buckets.
Yeah. This is the rematch of last year's Stanford game at home, which was the scariest thing I've ever seen on a basketball court, and also the coolest thing I've ever seen on a basketball court.
Yeah, to where Evan Batty rolled up and, like, rolled over Oscar Da Silva, and Da Silva was, like, unconscious, bleeding from his head.
Evan Batty lost his mind, as I would as well. Because he thought he killed a guy. Like, he thought he killed a man on the court.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you remember, I'll never forget. I'll bring it up again. Evan Batty taking free throws after that, and he was crying as he like hit the free throws. He was crying as he hit a three later that game as CU pulled ahead, just because he was like, everyone was just so, it was so much emotion in there. And both teams, I mean, if you remember, they gathered at half court, they said a prayer for everyone. I don't know. It was a lot of sportsmanship. I think both Tab Oil likes Jared Haas, and these teams like each other generally.
I like this team, the Stanford team.
But I'm not as scared as they are, as I was last year. Because last year they were way scared of your team.
I was really rooting for Tyrell Terry to come back to Stanford this year, because they would have been so good with him back. I was looking, I did the deep dive, analytical deep dive, and Stanford really wants other teams to just shoot themselves out of a game. They want to lock down the paint and just let other teams just take as many threes as their little hearts desire. And that works against teams that can't really shoot. But if CU, and we talked about it, their sixth best three-point shooter is at 36%. Everybody else is in the 40s. That's going to be really dangerous to play against CU, because if CU has like even an average shooting night, this should be a win just because of how many threes are going to go in. Oregon lost because they missed everything. Oh, no. Sorry. Oregon beat Stanford because they just rained threes. No. Oregon won by 17.
Who am I? Oh, I'm thinking of Arizona. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Arizona lost even though they got hot from three.
Yeah.
But Oregon, I think they shot 33 two-pointers and 33 three-pointers. So that's kind of the shot distribution Stanford likes their opponents to take. Oregon just made a shit ton of those.
Yeah, I mean, you say likes to take. I think what that is that they are good at interior defense. De Silva is obviously as solid as ever. Spencer Jones is a pretty interesting piece. They move around on D quite a bit. Jaden Dallaire is another guy that just added that was pretty interesting. They have some size. The thing is, I don't know. CU is always going to be interior first, exterior second. And I think CU is still going to try to pound the paint. And they've been largely successful at that this year.
I think, though, that if a team is physical enough inside, CU gets a little hesitant to attack and they settle for jumpers.
They were earlier this year. I think we are reaching the crest of CU confidence right now.
Okay. Well, I think
we're pretty confident.
I want that to last. I know, like, Tad isn't going to be underrating Stanford.
No.
I mean, if we could talk about this game, if CU wins this game, they have at least four more straight that they absolutely should win by like double digits.
Yeah, so
it gets really fun. The schedule gets nice and easy right after this game.
You say that, you know that CU is going to lose to one of Washington and Wazoo. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay. But if you beat Stanford and you have four wins in a row and four easy wins coming up, it's okay to go 7-1 in a stretch rather than 8-0. I think it's okay.
So, yeah, let's bring it back a little bit to Stanford, like you said, they also, on offense, Stanford takes almost no threes and can almost make no threes. They don't have a lot of great shooters.
Zaire Williams likes to shoot them out of game sometimes too.
Yeah. So they're at 3-point percentage, or as a team, is at 31%, and CU's is at 37%. Now, I will say Stanford, like you said, their saving grace is they're allowing 31% on three as well. So they also make teams shoot themselves out of games. This is really going to be, I think, an interior matchup. So going further into that, Stanford shoots 52% from two, which is pretty good. It's in the top 100 of the country. But this is where Tab Oil comes back to help CU. Do you know what Tab Oil or CU's 2-point percentage is?
Oh, I'm looking at it. It's 50%.
No, sorry, on defense, what they allow.
47.
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty good. So that's basically going to be where the where I think the battle is going to be. If CU can force Stanford into tough late shot clock shots, which CU is one of the best in the country at doing, is late, those late shot clock shots.
Currently, let's see, they are 341st in time allowed, which is fifth longest in the country, opponents taking shots.
Right, and I believe Stanford is pretty methodical on offense, right? They also are okay with a long clock?
No, they take about 16 seconds to take a shot.
Okay.
Like, that's their average possession length is 16 seconds. CU is allowing 19 seconds, which is a pretty big difference.
Yeah.
Considering the numbers.
Well, I don't know. It's a fun matchup, and I think both teams are actually kind of similar in how they want the game to look.
Yeah.
This would be a game where we've watched this battle for 4 years, and I love this battle. You might know Dejon Davis is Stanford's point guard. Mm-hmm. And he's going up against McKinley Wright. They're both senior guards that have started for 4 years. So they know each other pretty well at this point. And McKinley's gotten the best of Dejon overall.
I want to look up Dejon's stats.
I think Zaire's at 6'8", but I think they might put Parquet on him just because of his nutso length. And Parquet will, I think.
Parquet should be on it.
Doing pretty well. He'll do pretty well there.
Let's see.
This is fun. Now I'm way more excited for this match. It's going to be it might be a close game.
Let's see. Keep talking. I'm solid.
So, like we said, game is at Saturday at 1 on the Pac-12 Network, which is fortunate. This is Pac-12 Network because it's the top 50 matchup. And KenPom predicts a 7-point win for CU at a 72% win expectancy. We'll see if that holds up. But if CU, like you said, can clear this hurdle, they have a nice, easy runway that hopefully they just don't mess up on. And it's possible that they end this stretch 15-3 coming into the home stretch, which is that opens you up for quite a bit of stuff. Like that opens you, that gets you into like some nice 2 or 3 seed territory if you can keep peaking. We'll see. The inevitable collapse will happen, but
so Stanford at home, Washington and Washington State on the road. Washington's probably the worst team in the conference. Washington State is frisky, but not great. And then Washington State at home, Utah at home, and then Arizona State and Arizona at home. That's their next 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But that's looking nice.
Yep.
Because CU's probably going to be ranked if they beat Stanford. And then they can just start climbing if they keep on winning.
Yeah, so number one, I'm sure, and I don't think they're overlooking them at all, but just beat Stanford on Saturday, and you're looking, you are now.
They're not overlooking Stanford with Washington on deck.
No. So I don't know. I'm excited for this matchup. It's two teams that look pretty similar, honestly. I think CU just has more balance, and that's gonna put them ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Stanford only has like 2-3 guys they can really depend on.
Yeah, and Oscar Da Silva has a great career also. And I'm sure there's going to be something in between these two teams post-game or pre-game or something.
I hope.
Yeah, I really want these two to be the best two because I love both these programs right now.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch the game because I'll be working. I'm actually really happy about that. I would be nervous. So I'm going to try not to check my little stats because if I had seen on my phone that CU was losing at 10 at halftime to Utah, I would have been pissed. And I was pissed during that game because CU missed like literally 10 layups in the first half.
Actually 10 layups.
Actually, but they went 3 of 13 on layups. That's so fucking bad. Like even in high school, that's bad.
They turned it around. They turned it around. Yeah. So Sam, do you have an average or a prediction?
CU wins by 6. 76 okay. to 7. No. Hang on a second. 68-62. CU wins.
That sounds a little more in line with what I was thinking. Let's look at the lines real quick. Like we said, Saturday at 1, Stanford plays Colorado. And the line for that game currently right now, I'm definitely not stalling, but the line for that game is CU. I don't see a line.
Thanks.
So
thanks for everything.
Yeah, that's super helpful. Anyways, I think they're projected to win around that, so that makes sense.
Let me see if I can find the line. I don't see a line.
Okay, well, we're recording this Friday morning. The line will come out, and I don't know. Watch that game. Get excited for this team because they McKinley Wright is worth it by himself, and the rest of the team, hey, they aren't bad either.
Yeah. All right, Jack, I'm done.
I'm done.
All right. Take care.
See ya.